Brad is on the line. Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
I am, and how are you doing?
I am. I guess we could just end the podcast.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Enough said, right?
Yeah.
Everybody in the universe knows what I'm thinking anyway. Okay, I'm just kidding. What is with this whining here?
I don't know. That's what you told me.
I mean, come on. You're grumbling, publicly complaining.
Yeah, because my publisher is totally unresponsive to my manipulative machinations.
Well, that's it. I'm unresponsible to your manipulative machinations. That's exactly correct. Let's get into the meat and potatoes of what you're saying. I like the title of your book, by the way. I think it's going to be awesome, and I can't wait to read it because it sounds like something I certainly want to do. In your article, though, you ask a couple questions. There's a question mark here right beside this statement. My only comments related to this, perhaps, and if that is possible, so what? And what you're referring to is the preceding paragraph where you suggest that some folks think that Jesus was hallucinating during his 40-day fast. Why do you think that's a so what? I mean, you think it doesn't matter whether he's hallucinating or not?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I think.
Oh. Well, I happen to have had some hallucinations, and if I had followed them in my lifetime, I probably wouldn't have gotten anywhere.
Oh.
So I kind of think it could be an important distinction.
Well, so what, though? You're not going to prove it to anybody by arguing the point, so I just say, so what?
Oh, that's what you mean.
Okay. It's like when I say to you, okay, do you want me to rewrite the article? Tear it up.
Yeah.
I don't do arguing very well. You know, In fact, I developed a whole training program for salespeople based on the way they handle objections in their head was to say, your mother wears army boots. Because they don't mean anything. You know, what's the point?
Objections don't mean anything? How do you mean?
No. Generally, it's just a defensive mechanism. You know, somebody's afraid they're going to be sold something. So,
okay.
If it's a real thing, it'll come up again. Well, what I would do half the time is, do you really mean that? You really care about that? Okay, I'll go find myself a real live prospect and I'd walk out the door.
Oh, I like that sales philosophy. Boy, that'd keep a lot of people poor. Especially the salespeople who followed your advice. You mean you're not sitting in front of a prospect? What the heck was going on?
My point is, spend your time in intelligent prospecting, finding somebody that may have a legitimate need for something that you have, and then you can have some fun. Sit there and argue over silliness, what's the point?
Okay, so then back to the story and how that applies to this concept of Jesus hallucinating or not. The person who's stating that is probably just doesn't really want to accept what you have to say, and therefore they're putting up this straw dog.
Yeah.
So that it can bark at you.
Yeah. Maybe they really think that's a possibility. You've fasted before. Have you ever found yourself hallucinating from fasting?
But to me, they were real experiences because I've had hallucinations, and what I've experienced during fasting seemed to me quite different.
And I would agree with that. That's just some expert opinion that hallucinations are dangerous because, I mean, fasting is dangerous, and that's one of the reasons it's dangerous is it causes hallucinations. I don't even believe it. However, I did for a while worry about it, so what I did find, I think I said it in the article, is that I would check it out. You know, it would force me to say, hey, Dad, what's going on here?
What I find interesting about this is that your experience from fasting was that you became closer or more closely connected with the universe or becoming one with the Father by fasting.
Well, I what I'm saying in the article is if anybody's ever struggled with Jesus' words, and, you know, many evangelical Christians related to Jesus' remarks that I and the Father are one, and before there was an Abraham, I am. Take that as conclusive proof that Jesus was claiming to be equal with God, which he didn't, in my view. In fact, he made statements like, why do you call me good? Only one is good, God, and those kinds of things. So I find it kind of flimsy evidence, especially with how I have evolved in my thinking now. Part of the whole thing of the new book is getting into the I am consciousness that first introduced as part of my writing was in Leapfrog, because I became exposed to people who understood I am consciousness and being one with the super intelligence or the infinite intelligence or the source, as you and I have come to call it, him, her.
Okay, well, a little bit further on in the same part of the article, before you actually get into the excerpt of your book, you say, what I saw was that the chemical composition of the seawater had not changed, but that the molecular structure of the water had been altered due to temperature variation. Well, this may be a stupid question, but how could you see that?
I don't know. That's just what came to me.
Okay, I see.
I saw, meaning, you know, and it was a guy, I referred to him in the article, the chemical engineer. He was actually a very highly qualified chemist that had several inventions to his name, one of which was he invented the lubricant that enabled the sealing of for aluminum cans. Until he invented that lubricant, they had to use steel because the aluminum would gum up the machinery all the time. So anyway, there was a reason I had to share the story I wrote about that jar of water. And so I said, of course, I don't know what I'm talking about there. And he said, well, that's a scientific fact. When you change the temperature of water, you change the molecular structure. And he got into H2O and all that. And I said, well, isn't that chemical composition? And he said, no. Change. There's no change of the chemistry. The change of the molecules. And
are they contract or they expand based on the temperature? And the speed at which the vibration changes as well. I think my kids taught me that when they took grade 9 science or something like that. Not that I didn't take grade 9 science, it's just that, you know, I mean, if you don't use it, you lose it, right? But what I'm interested in about that is that, so the molecular structure of the water changed, and yet when you poured it back into the ocean, it became one with the ocean, so to speak, right?
Yeah, it's absorbed right back in.
Right, and then when I read your excerpt, I'm jumping ahead of myself. Let's get into the excerpt. I don't want to jump ahead of myself. Let's follow through your article sequentially. You make kind of a promise here that I'm really interested in. Focus on the fact that in order to get over the final hurdle, you have to get beyond all your previous thinking, whatever the source. Wow, that's a tall order. I mean, that's probably one of the biggest challenges people face in life.
Yep. You're never going to transcend from separateness, separate consciousness, that you're separated from the intelligence, if you want to use that term. You'll never get past that until you're willing to say, hey, let's wipe the slate clean. You've got to get past those crazy religious images.
Well, not just religious images, anything experiential, I think.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
I mean, a lot of people adopt their religion based on their experiences as opposed to based on anything else. My experiences is I trust Joe, and Joe seems like he's a happy guy. That happy guy is a Buddhist, so I want to be happy like Joe, so I think Buddhists are happy.
Yeah, good statement.
Right? So that's a previous way of thinking, and you're saying I need to let go of that. It's funny, because one of the resistances that I would have to letting go of that would be one of the same resistances I had to taking it on in the first place. Before I took any form of religion, I went, well, gee, if I become a Christian, I can't drink, I can't smoke, I can't watch Sunday football, And I can't cuss and be a rowdy bum anymore. I have to become straight-laced, wear a tie all the time, and go knock door-to-door and sell tracks.
Well, is that why we're not Christians?
Yeah, well, so my willingness to be able to say, okay, well, whatever it was in the past that was important to me, I'm willing to let go. I want something more out of my life. I want change, and and I want a relationship with God, so I adopted Christianity. So now you're telling me that I have to go through the same process again to move on to the next level. Yikes!
No free lunch, bub.
You're hard. You're too hard on me. I did it once. Why do I have to do it again?
I find that I just about have to do it every day.
It seems to be, yeah, every day, yeah. I would agree with that. Every day I have to let go of some preconceived notion or idea that I have. Now, this is very interesting for me. You no longer identify yourself as, and I'm going to pick Christian specifically because at one point in time you did identify yourself a Christian. You give a fairly valid reason, but I want to confirm something. Is that what you believe that Christianity does? Is it to focus on the system of thinking about Jesus?
At best.
But I've seen miracles happen in Christian churches, and I've participated in miracles in Christian churches, and I've seen or felt the presence of God show up at a church service or two.
It is a system. It portrays, most of Christianity portrays that Jesus Christ was real. Yes, I've got my right hand up on that. Yeah, I agree with that. He was real. Historical figure, and obviously did some things and said some things that the belief in which changed the world to a large degree. I mean, we have a lot of what I didn't you weren't you the one who told me Christianity is the has more adherents than any other religion in the world?
33%. Yep, you bet.
So, if that being the case, I don't have any argument with that. It's the devil is in the details, as they say. However, and what it's become. Christianity, I think, almost anybody would agree, is comprised, the majority of the religion is comprised of people who go sit in church once a week or more and listen to some sort of a production as spectators.
Okay.
So it's a system, at best, about Jesus.
Okay. But you're suggesting that what we're supposed to be doing was to become Jesus.
Well, that's what he said. You know, if you believe in me, you're gonna be me, and you're gonna do what I did. Point is to get to the point in your consciousness to understand that he didn't do anything. That's the exciting thing. He said, if you listen to what he said, you've seen the things I do. I didn't do them. The Father in me did them.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that. You're saying that there's a way that I can get to understanding what that statement really means. And you single out Christianity here and say that we need to stop identifying I'm going to take it on personally. I need to stop identifying myself by the body bag I occupy or anything that this body bag does. Well, how the heck do I do that? Did Jesus?
I believe he did.
If that's the case, then why would he say, I didn't do these things, the Father inside me did those things? I mean, he's identifying with himself when he says that.
How do you see that?
Well, he's differentiating from himself and the source of everything. He's the jar of water as opposed to the ocean. And the jar of water is out of the ocean. It's encapsulated by the jar. And yet, ultimately, it's the same ocean. You've just moved one piece of it away. It's still the same ocean. And your previous statement here, you go, well, I got to stop identifying myself by the body bag. So then what you're saying is for me to understand, or what I'm taking from it, and I could be misreading you, that's why we're having this conversation, is that as soon as I stop calling myself Ryan and acknowledging that I am, and that's all that I am, is I am, well, why would I even need the reference of inside, outside? It's not me that does it, but the Father within me that does it. Like, I don't get it.
Well, I think, and, you know, my opinion, but it seems to me that that's where it has to begin. You have to be conscious that you are one with infinite intelligence, and that when we do, what freed me up from anything was to recognize clearly that I can't do anything. It's the source. And why is it then that I can move in the miraculous? And you know that I have and do, and so do you, for that matter. So that's unique to me, but it is unique to the place where what you do when you're having this dual consciousness, or this consciousness of separateness, is that you're doing it whatever. You're the being the instrument, God by whatever other title, and it isn't. And it's shifting away from that consciousness to the consciousness that I am one. I am of, in and of the will of God. His presence and his power are upon me. I don't have anything else. And when you accept that and understand it, then you're not all ego-bound to worrying about your ministry because you don't have one. It's not yours. It's God's ministry. I don't know. Does that make any sense at all?
Okay, on a fundamental level, but then I lose myself in the ocean. Am I the ocean or am I the jar? Am I the ocean in the jar?
Okay, wait a minute. We're looking, and I think we may be splitting hairs, or attempting to. We're talking about having a consciousness